Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What makes a good team? How do you create a good culture? That's at the heart of the discussion each week here on the Playmakers Playbook. And Leading Teams is a business that specialises in answering those questions. They've done it to great effect for two decades now, playing their part in some of the biggest sporting success stories here in Australia and New Zealand. This is the Playmakers Playbook, brought to you by Buildcorp, protecting their people and projects through adaptability and proactive safety. I'm Nick McArdle, host of the Playmakers Playbook. If you want to be a better leader in business or sport, or if you simply love a good story, this podcast is for you. This week's guest played and coached across a number of clubs in the NRL long enough to know the key differences between a good and bad culture. Kurt Wrigley has taken all of that experience into his role with Leading Teams. 16 of the 18 AFL clubs have engaged the organisation, along with a number of NRL clubs, the Waratahs, Diamonds, Boomers and Opals, as well as the Australian and New Zealand men's cricket teams. Today, you'll get a taste of some of the lessons they've learned.
So Hawthorn have done it. The first team in the 18-team competition to go back to back to back. They're three-peaters. They are remarkable.
Well, that's just one of the success stories Leading Teams has been a part of, Hawthorn's three-peat between 2013 and 2015. Kurt Wrigley, welcome to the Playmakers Playbook.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Nick.
Been looking forward to this chat. More about the business shortly, but you are probably a perfect fit for your role, given that you had that lived experience as a player in rugby league and then later as a coach. So I guess a lot of what you learn through that time you've brought to your day-to-day now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess I didn't sort of run into Leading Teams until I'd finished playing. But I think along the way as a player, and I didn't have a long, you know, distinguished career, but I noticed things along the way and, you know, I sort of could feel when a club had things going well and a good, strong culture. And I also, you got the feeling pretty quickly when a club or an organisation didn't have it going well. So, yeah, no, the journey's been great. And I guess being a client of Leading Teams at three different organisations, three different NRL clubs, was a real eye-opener for me. So it sort of, again, it, I guess it confirmed that, you know, the power of sort of the stuff we do. You know, when I worked at Newcastle, we were coming off two wooden spoons. But when I was at South Sydney, we were a really high quality team that wanted to, you know, take that next step and be a premiership winner. So it's been great to be part of.
So obviously during the stretch when you were wearing the boots and you had the shorts and the jersey on, you would have seen good cultures and bad cultures, like you say. And how did that extrapolate onto the field? How did that reflect in on-field performance? What is that direct correlation? And was it always a direct correlation?
Yeah, I think it was. You know, and I can just experience, as I said before, you can notice things really early on in terms of when you come into a club, how you feel welcome, any organisation really, how you feel welcome, who, you know, shows you the ropes, who, you know, lets you know what the expectations are, or do you just discover it by doing something wrong? You know, and look, I sort of reflect on, you know, when I first went to when I first moved down to Sydney and played at Cronulla. And I can still remember, you know, I think it was about our fourth training session, and we had the executive come in and address the players and, you know, announce to everyone that, you know, we've all got to chip in. We're doing it financially tough this year, and, you know, everyone's got to take a 20% pay cut, you know. And back then it was, I wasn't on much anyway. So, and all the guys I was sitting near sort of said, oh, well, I'm on nothing. So 20% of nothing's nothing. But yeah, it was you could see how it upset some of the senior players. The players take a key role in, you know, what's done around here. And when I moved on to play at St George, I really quickly noticed the standards. If I can remember one of my first sessions at St George, you know, I didn't go around a hat. It was on a run, and you know, I probably would have got away with that at Cronulla, you know. But it was a player who was not a senior player, but someone said to me, we don't do that around here. You know, so pretty quickly you got the message, you know, that these are the expectations here, and we don't put up with that. Yeah, if you can go and play your trade somewhere else.
So it seems to me that they're often quite simple things, you know, standards, communication. It's not rocket science.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only that, but it felt like at St George anyway, it felt like no one was having a go at me. They actually cared enough about me to tell me, you know, but it's also about, you know, they did it respectfully. They didn't try and put me down, you know. So, and I felt, you know, I trusted their intent in some sense.
So you look at all those things that you picked up over the years, and then you're able to bring them into leading teams. And, you know, it's an incredible read to see the elite sporting teams that leading teams has worked with over the years, 16 of the 18 AFL clubs. And I mentioned the Hawks off the top, but certainly the Swans, more recently Port and the Lions, St George, the Knights, the Sharks, the Eels in the NRL, and you've been closely associated with the Eels, the Waratahs in rugby union, the Diamonds, the Boomers, the Opals, and the Australian and New Zealand men's cricket team. So you are talking about some incredibly elite athletes and elite organisations. What does leading teams bring to all of those already high-achieving organisations?
So I guess our purpose is to help teams and individuals improve performance, but, you know, ours is a method that sort of requires the leadership or the coaching staff or the administration to engage and empower the playing group. So, you know, we find that as a general rule, even in corporate, you know, unless people really feel like their opinion's heard, unless they weigh into decisions, they won't really buy in. So and that's the first bit, you know. And I know when Ray was working with Paul Roos early on, in the early 2000s.
That's Ray McLean, the founder?
Yeah, Ray McLean. And Paul Roos said to him, you know, I've played 350 games of AFL footy and I can't really remember a coach asking for my view, you know. So it's just unlocking that, all of that knowledge, you know, and getting buy-in. And I guess, and look, when we work with not only sporting teams but companies, I think often what they'll do is sort of, you know, the leadership or the coaching staff will think up some buzzwords or some, you know, what identity the team wants to have, you know, in terms of behaviour, and then they'll sort of plaster them around, you know, the work site. And you know, then they wonder why people just sort of walk past them and they don't have any, you know, connection to them. So I guess that's the first, and that was the real change when Ray started working with those AFL clubs to engage the team. So firstly, you know, do an audit. And I can remember when I first started with Parramatta, they just come off the wooden spoon, I think in 2017 it might have been. And we were on their pre-season camp and having really open, honest conversations about, you know, how would we be seen by other clubs, you know, and some of the words that they came up with weren't great, you know, and so this wasn't about, you know, I guess living there and sort of wallowing in that. It was, okay, it is what it is. We've sort of got to own that in some sense, but what do we want it to look like, you know? What sort of team would we like to be, and what real, a sort of a clear set of behaviours? And we don't want to like a code of conduct, like, but what are some a broad set of behaviours we could, as a group, adhere to, you know, going forward, you know? So, yeah, and I think that's the power in it, getting them to come up with it or at least agree to it. And then how they're going to hand it on to new people when, you know, at the end of that next year, you know, sort of thing. So
yeah, so they
take them on the journey.
Yeah, so if they're involved in the creation, they're more likely to live it.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
You've touched, I think, on the first of the core principles for leading teams, and that is that culture of empowerment and the way that drives success. I just want to work through them one by one, and there's five of them, as I understand it. The second one being high-performing teams have high-performing leaders. Can you just talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, first of all, the leaders are more about influence, so less about their tenure, how long they've been there, how even their position. So it's more about, yeah, which are the people in your organisation or your team that have influence? And then the next question is, are they influencing the right way? You know, are they taking us in the right direction, and or are they actually influencing us down the wrong path? So that's the bit you need to get those people on board. And when we talk about influence, the three variables for us is, firstly, they've got to be people who are modelling the right behaviour, because they have to have a leg to stand on. And then if I'm going to influence other people, you know, the two levers that I use is looking out for other people that are doing it, and recognising and rewarding and noticing it, all right? So that's the first bit. And then the second bit is, if I see things that are outside our agreed behaviours, that I'll challenge, you know? So challenge the behaviour but support the person. So, and I think that's the big difference with teams and organisations that empower the group. If you feel like you've been part of that and you see something that's not right, you'll be less likely to sort of look at each other and go, well, when's management going to do something about that? Or when's the coach going to, you know, they'll actually, when they see something, they'll do something about it, and they'll nearly self-manage. Mm. So that's what we're trying to do, is to get teams to self-manage more, make it clear what are their roles, clear on behaviour, and then they can self-manage, you know, and that's more powerful, we think, if you're guided back into line by your peers.
Mm. Rather than someone with a big stick at the top of the food chain.
Absolutely.
The next one is clarity of purpose, and I guess some of that feeds into this. Clarity of purpose and the way that aligns a team and, you know, provides that clear goal that everyone can get on board and work towards.
Yeah, well, yeah, obviously we think it's something that's probably skipped over a little bit with some teams and organisations, and in the sporting sense, when you ask groups, you know, what do you think the purpose of an NRL team or a what do you think the purpose of an Australian cricket team may have been at one stage? What do they say? They say, oh, to win. And that's obvious, you know, but we would sort of say, well, yeah, that's a result or an outcome. Well, what is the reason why they exist, you know? So, and I'm not sure if you, Nick, if you caught the test on Amazon Prime. So, you know, and you can see where teams can get into trouble if winning or being the number one, you know, cricketing nation or whatever, if that is their only focus in terms of purpose, that can get them into trouble. You know, Essendon found that with their drug scandal, you know. So trying to get teams to, and we had it at South Sydney, we had the conversation about why do we exist as a team, and you know, we talk about winning the comp, anything else, anything higher level than that. And I think when, for people that don't know, you know, Souths was thrown out of the competition in those early 2000s, and they had 100,000 people march on Town Hall. They had pensioners giving their $5 and $10 in to get the club back. Luckily, they were able to, you know, I guess get some big hitters to stump up some money and get it going. But once the players actually learned a bit more about the history of that, it was more a sort of about repaying the fans for what they did to get them back in. So, and that can impact them at training, outside of training, at a, you know, at a sponsor's function, at a community event. So it sort of connects everyone to the big picture, you know, and whether they're the best player in the team and the highest paid player, or whether they're, you know, squad member number 37 or whatever. So if you, and that's, I think, is the challenge of leadership, to connect everyone to why we are all in this.
So with the Australian cricket team, I think they sat down and kicked that around and sort of said, well, you know, yes, we want to win, but on the way, we want to be a team that our whole country is proud of, et cetera, et cetera.
So respect baggy green was the key message, wasn't it?
That's right. So with the corporates that you work with then, for example, I mean, to me, it's a lot more simple to come to that conclusion within a national team environment or a team that you know you've got supporters. What does that look like for a corporate?
Yeah, obviously, you know, the connection with corporate could be to make money, you know, and again, sometimes I'll say, well, I'm not sure how the person on reception who's earning 35 grand, I don't know how that's going to get them out of bed and earn you a lot of money up the top. So again, taking the whole group on that journey a little bit about, you know, why do we do what we do? What purpose can we actually come to a sort of an agreement there, or get a common purpose that, regardless of your role, can sort of attach me to that? And it differentiates us from the mob down the road that are doing the same thing.
That, in a sense, feeds into the next core principle about relationships and mutual trust and respect and them being a key element to that team success. I guess, you know, what you've just talked about, it touches on that, but that's the common purpose, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, if we can tie into that, but also if you know, if we come from a place of mutual trust and respect, we're more likely to be able to have more open dialogue, you know. I'm able to give you some feedback to help you get better. And if I don't have that trust, it's not really going to land. Mm. You know? So critically, that's a component that we work hard with teams so that they can have those robust conversations so people won't take it personally. You know, it's just about us getting better, not me being right.
Yeah. And those robust conversations can only be had if you've got the agreed behaviours and values that are being embraced by the team, and that is your final core principle. Everyone's on the same page.
That's it. So that connects everyone. That's our constitution as a team. So so if I do, you know, pull you up on a behaviour, It's not personal. It's based on what we agree. So I think with our stuff, when we call them genuine conversations, and you probably get to that, but genuine conversations take many forms. It's not just noticing that what people aren't doing well. It's absolutely looking out for people that are doing the right thing and going the extra yard.
So how does that all come together over time in the teams that you've worked with and that your colleagues have worked with? That doesn't necessarily guarantee success, does it? You know, getting all those things right. How far can that take you, and what are the other things that you need before you're lifting that Premiership Cup?
You know, we talk about, for me to trust someone else in the team, I've got to trust their competence. So they have to have the skills to do the job. You know, they have to have talent. But also, you know, how do those skills hold up under pressure? So there's that bit. But we try and balance that out with, you know, we're looking for people that have talent, absolutely, but how's their character, you know? So, and I guess the definition of character for us is, you know, are you good for your word, and will you put the team before yourself when required? So it's not that I'm all in for team and nothing for me. That doesn't work either. So it's that balance of, you know, when we recruit people, it's not just looking for they've got the talent or the skills to do this. And same in corporate. And I think that's what teams do get caught with. You know, they don't, I guess, inquire or find out about, are they a cultural fit for us? The teams that have really strong culture look for that first, nearly. Obviously, people need to have some talent, but they'll pick on character first. And that happened with the Australian cricket team. I think Justin Langer talked about character over cover drives. You know, that's how he was going to select the team. And he was really clear early on. And you look at the Melbourne Storm, they've made a few recruitment errors along the way, but they don't last long. You know, they get moved to another club quickly, whereas I think clubs that don't have a real sense of what their culture is, or they don't know what they're looking for, they just pick people who are good, they sometimes get caught with them for a long time, and they don't know how to move them, or, yeah, don't know how to help them.
So you can buy the biggest name. You can buy the most talented player or the most skillful player, but if it's not right for the culture, it doesn't matter.
Absolutely. Or they don't have an environment where, you know, the players have much say. They get to pick the uniform that they wear on game day. That's it. Mm. You know, so, and that's what happens when a coach leaves. You know, that's a coach that's fairly autocratic, and, you know, things don't get done around here unless I tick off on them. Unfortunately, when they leave, the place falls to pieces, you know, and sometimes they can wear that as a bit of a badge of honour. But so we talk to not only teams but individuals, you know, leaders about, you know, what's your legacy? You know, what do you want to leave behind? Do you want it when you leave, everything falls to bits, or do you want to – and the same with senior players. When they're getting closer to the end, what role can you play in developing those younger players underneath you? Mm. You know, so, and that's what leadership we think is. It's what you leave behind, not what you take.
Is there also a role for an organisation such as yours to consult with? Now, you're talking about, you know, the work that you do with organisations, but have you ever had the opportunity to consult with players and say, listen, for you, let's have an honest conversation here. You're an average player. If you go over here to a club that hasn't got a great culture, you will continue to be an average player. It may even shorten your career. But if you go here, let's say in the Melbourne Storm's case, you can actually be a really legitimate player within this competition, or a much better player. Yeah. So is it important that individuals actually take on board some of what we've been talking about?
Well, absolutely. And I think that's probably what doesn't happen, because I'm not sure that player managers or agents understand that. And sometimes they might be just wanting to go to the highest bidder, which, as you pointed out, that can really shorten the life of a player, particularly if they're not overly talented, you know. But, yeah, so I think, look, we do some work with senior leaders and leadership groups and emerging groups in clubs, you know, and that's getting them to think about, you know, what's the club the best fit for me? You know, how do I have an impact on the culture here? All of those things come into play, but that's definitely something worth thinking about if you're a player.
We've talked about elite sporting teams. We've talked about, large corporates, but sometimes I like to think that, you know, maybe the local sporting team is having a listen to these things and can pick things up, or even a small business around the corner. And we talked about those core principles, but if you can leave us with just a couple of things for someone, you know, who's not full-time, not getting paid, but they just love their sport, whatever it might be, or they're trying to, you know, run their small business, what are the things they should be thinking about day to day?
We think the stuff that we do can work across any given team, you know, and that was the title of Ray's first book. And we work with, you know, husband and wife businesses, you know. So I guess, and as they scale up, or even if they stay small, I think the big bit is about having real clear expectations, you know, so both on people's roles and responsibilities, so on that mechanic side, but also on the behavioural side, you know, so have those conversations about what sort of group and what sort of team do we want to be and what does that look like in action? And even, you know, talking about, you know, what are the behaviours we don't tolerate here? If you can have those conversations, you can make it clearer for people and then they can get on with their work and as I said, nearly self-manage. So that's the role of leadership, to create clarity. And I think it's a real business imperative, not only in terms of performance and being able to stay, you know, afloat during, you know, these times that we're in now, but also for people's well-being. Can we have genuine conversations about performance so people, you know, they feel like they're empowered, they feel like they're valued at work? That impacts them at home. That impacts them as a parent, you know. I'm not sure you're like me, Nick, but if I have a bad day at work, it comes home with me.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and vice versa. You know, if something's going on at home, it impacts me at work. So very hard to really clearly define work. You know, some people can do it better than others, but getting a real idea of what your team identity is and then build real trust within your team so that you can help people get better. You know, so that if you've got to have those genuine conversations with people, that they know you're coming from a good place.
Yeah, the consultation piece is really interesting, and I don't think that has ever changed for me from my first job as a 21 year old, to be asked what I thought of a particular issue or process felt good. And I still got that feeling, still had that feeling at the age of, you know, 50 to be asked my opinion on something. You think, wow, I'm valued here. That's really important.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's if you've got an environment where people can see something that could help that place get better and it can't get to the table, you deserve mediocrity.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So, you know, we sort of say that quote, none of us is smart as all of us. You know, and do you really believe that? Or, you know, if you think your players are just resources to be exhausted and used up, then they'll feel that. They'll notice that.
Yeah.
Will they really give their 110% for you?
And finally, you know, you're working with all these organisations to try and make them better. Where do you go for your wisdom and to help you develop as this facilitator and leader within your area of expertise?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll obviously learn off some of the people that I'm working with, but you know, podcasts and reading and a number of great books, and also my colleagues at Leading Teams. So we actually spend a lot of time on training and development, and we don't normally get together every 6 weeks in Melbourne, but obviously now it's on Zoom. But we engage in a lot of feedback. So we open ourselves up to, you know, getting observed, so that, and I think initially it was a bit confronting, you know, someone's telling me what I've done wrong and right, you know, here. But again, it comes down to that, you know, if I really trust them and they're thankful for it in the end, there might be a few things that sting a little bit early, but get over yourself quickly. And if I trust their intent, then I'd be crazy not to at least listen.
Hey, Kurt, thanks so much for your time today. I mean, I think obviously the people you work with get huge benefit from this. I find it fascinating, and I really hope that those listening to the podcast today benefit as well. It's important stuff. Thanks for joining us on the Playmakers Playbook.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Nick. Enjoyed that.
Kurt Wrigley and some of the leading team's philosophy on this week's Playmakers Playbook. Some great little nuggets of advice in there. The Playmakers Playbook is brought to you by Buildcorp, where great teams are built on shared values. It's available wherever you get your favourite podcasts, and make sure you subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Leave a 5-star rating and a review. That helps others find us. And if you really did enjoy it, tell a friend. I'm Nick McArdle. Join me next time on the Playmakers Playbook.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.